You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 29 September. Thanks to Dudu for standing in. I'm back 11 weeks to year end. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth. US GDP was revised on Friday. Man, it was revised strongly higher. But of course, we've got jobs data later this week. We had PCE at 2.9%. I also want to touch on Brent and silver. Mark Oswin from the World Gold Council. They're looking at the problem where we're trying to improve the tradability of stored gold. And Bianca Burtis from Citadel Global. What drives the rand and what makes it quite so volatile? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, turnarounds and Eskom and Transnet not yet showing in GDP figures. Before SA has racked up some impressive successes, no sign that this yet in economic growth figures. Business Day, Investec granted energy trading license. Approval by NERSA marks a milestone in the liberalization of SA's energy sector. Morning markets, US on Friday was green, S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ 0.4%. Easter's mostly higher, Sydney's 0.75% up, but Tokyo's the red down 1%, Hong Kong up 1.3%, Tencent 2.2% higher. Commodities mostly green, gold futures 3,807, Brent is the red at 69.80, platinum 1,626, palladium 1,318. PGMs had a great week. Rand 17.31, Bitcoin 111,800. Top 40 opening call 820 points or 0.8%, and that'll take us through 100,000.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. US GDP, it was a revision number for Q2, came in very, very strong. And I have to say, I mean, if we think back around the year, if we think back around what was happening during the particular second quarter with Liberation Day and the like, I mean, there is an underlying real strength in the US economy. Jobs data later this week might take some of the shine off. But for now, that was a big revision.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, if jobs Friday was Friday, so yeah, all eyes on that one. But yeah, looking back at last week, that US GDP, I mean, 3.8%, that is just for the 3 months to end of June, annualized. US exceptionalism certainly not over yet. And I'm surprised the market didn't sort of spike aggressively higher, but then I guess it is a reminder that this is for Q2, so that is until the end of June. You know, we're almost hitting October now, so a little bit backward looking. So I guess it makes that jobs data more key this Friday to see if there's any sort of slowing down in that number.
Yeah, absolutely. Jobs data, including U6, unemployment, etc. We'll get a much better picture around that. I also saw, I mean, I was away last week, and when I left, I don't know, Brent was 65. It was 70 on Friday. It slipped a little bit this morning. I mean, is there anything there? Well, perhaps that was where some of that response to the US GDP was. I saw West Texas Intermediate also higher.
Yeah, I think that if you look at the weekly sort of those inventory drawdown numbers that come out, I think on a Wednesday from the energy efficiency, I mean, there's quite a decent drawdown there too. I mean, obviously America coming out of their traditional driving season, which is their summer as well. So that's implying that things are still looking okay, which is good for the price of energy. And then, I mean, that is despite, I guess, the production that's been increased, the taps are being turned on by the Saudis and the sort of OPEC Plus guys as well. So that is quite surprising. Although it must be said, I mean, this is the first sort of decent sort of, a month of positive oil for a while. But you do think that maybe 75, maybe 80 is, if this, you know, US economy continues to do what it's doing, then it's more likely to be 80 than it is to be 60, I think.
Yeah, it's a good point. A strong economy and the US, you know, the largest in the world, of course, going to consume it. I want to pick your brain around silver. I have to be honest. I think I last looked at silver in about 2008, maybe. And everyone's been saying you got to look at the chart. I did. It is just off those 2011 highs. I mean, yes, we can buy ETFs, ETNs. Yes, we could buy silver miners. I have to be honest, I don't. Am I missing something here?
So, silver's one of those, real sort of speculative plays, quite honestly. I mean, traditionally, everyone's normally got for gold when they play in that space. But, it's a tricky one. I mean, it is quite a difficult one to trade. I've also traded it back in the day, and it's very geared, and it's a big-size contract too, so you've got to be careful. The other way to look at silver is I think it's certainly changed a little bit with usage. I mean, it's not in the space of just the speculative plays. I mean, it's used a lot now in renewable energy. Solar panels use silver's a key in solar panels. So that's the first thing. And also, like, even electric vehicles, it's used in the EV batteries in the charging infrastructure as well. So it's gone from being used quite a lot in industrials. I mean, the other thing, is it overvalued? Is it undervalued? How do you play it?
Yeah.
The traditional way to look at it is that silver-gold ratio. You literally just divide the price of gold by silver. Normally trades, the 60s. It's now sitting about 80. So it actually is quite cheap, you would say. But here's the but, Simon. I mean, you're a trader as well. Is it doesn't necessarily imply that silver has to catch up with gold. With these reversion trades, who says that gold doesn't have to pull back? So just be a little bit careful. But I say that, silver's up 2% again this morning. So, I mean, those silver bugs are having a good day.
They absolutely are. And I mean, hats off to them. We're not taking it away from them. But it has sort of gone under my radar. I've been in the gold trade, but not the silver trade. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, Sunlam Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today is around that silver trade. Are you investing in silver? Have you got the metal? Maybe you got some miners. Maybe like me, you have no silver and we've missed that run. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Mike Oswin. He is World Head of Market Structure and Innovation at the World Gold Council. Mike, you're bringing out a new product, and I'm not sure about the wholesale digital gold. Before we get to that, the problem with gold is that many banks, there might be central banks, there might even just be some high net worth individuals. We can use gold as collateral, but we don't because it's slow, because it's a little bit clunky, it's hard to move, and it has been a challenge for gold as long as we've been digging it out of the ground as a humanity.
Absolutely, Simon. Yeah, that's a very good point to start. The gold is widely accepted as collateral and trusted as collateral amongst many banks, clearing houses, exchanges. But they need that gold in the allocated form, so that bar of gold, if you imagine, has to be in a vault of the choice of the holder of that collateral. And that adds logistical problems to how you can send that collateral. It isn't a digitally native asset like a treasury bond or cash. So yes, this is the Wholesale Digital Gold Initiative aims to provide a solution for this.
Yeah, I remember working for JSC Stockbroker and having to settle Kruger Rands. We would physically have these Kruger Rands that arrive at our office and have to send them off to the new buyers. The wholesale digital gold, talk me through that. I mean, it explains itself a fair, but essentially it's the idea around digitizing the gold. What's that process?
Yeah, so if we look at this is very much for the OTC market, the London OTC market, or the wholesale market, as it's often called. And that is it's averaging currently $146 billion a day in trading value. It clears some 20 million ounces also a day. So it's a hugely significant wholesale market. It works in two ways. It works in an allocated way, which is where you are allocated a gold bar with a serial number, and that is held in a vault for you. And it works in what's called an unallocated way. Now, the unallocated market is hugely important because that is more efficient. You can trade in fractional amounts. That has more mobility. The disadvantage to unallocated is it is not directly underpinned by a specific physical bar. So you are taking on credit risk with your counterparty. So wholesale digital gold aims to bring the best of those two current ways of trading this market into a third pillar, where you will have a pool of physical gold always underpinning the digital representation. So you create the surety of physical gold backing, and you create the digital mobility for gold, which then gives it the utility as a financial collateral.
I take your point, and get sort of, as you say, that potential counterparty risk. And the idea here would be, I mean, this is going to simplify the process, and I imagine potentially, therefore, increase interest in gold as an asset. How is who's overseeing the digitizing? Because, of course, my question is, well, someone says this gold's there. Who's the trusted party, I suppose?
Yeah, and one of the most important aspects of this is that trust element. So there's a couple of things to look at from that perspective. This is an ecosystem. Wholesale digital gold is very much about bringing together the participants in the market. WGC is in a great position to be able to coalesce the industry around that. Yep. But this will need the involvement of the banks, tri-party agents, custodians. So by creating the ecosystem, we bring in the participants that can be trusted. I think the second and maybe even more important part is the legal structure that we've been working on that is defined in the white paper. We've been working with the participants and Linklaters on this for the last year to 18 months. And it's that legal structure that allows the pooled ownership of the physical gold amongst what we call core participants. But more importantly then, the digital representation that we call the pooled gold interest, or the PGI, as that is transferred to the participants and then to the participants and clients, the beneficial entitlement to the physical pool of gold transfers with that digital representation. So together with the participation in the ecosystem and that very robust legal structure, that's where we believe this is creating the trust required for especially for gold as collateral.
Yeah, I take your point. Is it live? Has it gone live? Is it going live? What is the timeline in that regard?
So the next step is a pilot. The white paper was published when we'd sort of fully defined the legal structure. Mm-hmm. We intend to mobilize the pilot towards the end of this year and then roll that into Q1 next year. The pilot will be a real world movement of gold as financial collateral. So that's a really important part of what we're doing next.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that and watch how it goes. I like it. To your point, it's the ability to make it so much easier and to make it a trusted process that is so incredibly key. We'll leave it there. It's Mike Goswin. He's Global Head of Market Structure and Innovation, World Gold Council. Mike, appreciate the time. Give your money smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Bianca Boortis, director at Citadel Global. Bianca, always great to chat. Rand, and we've said before, we as South Africans take our rand very, very personally. When it moves, we feel that it is either hating on us or loving on us as a country. The truth is, it is one of the most sensitive emerging market currencies around. And it is, I mean, just by its very nature and by its popularity, it is going to be very volatile. That is a feature, not a bug in our currency.
Good morning, Simon. You're absolutely right. It is a key feature of the South African rand. And it's not necessarily to say that it's always a bad thing or always a good thing, or that it has anything to do with what is happening locally in South Africa. I think we get way too attached to the moves of the rand in terms of what we see on the ground around us. Typically in the currency market, we refer to the rand as a high beta currency. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly in line with what you said. That basically means that when this risk on periods, the rand strongly outperforms its peers. And when it's risk off, it sells off aggressively. And that is attributed to the fact that it is an emerging market currency. We have proper liquidity. It acts as a go-to hedge or as a speculative vehicle for a lot of other emerging market currencies. And then obviously also because of our commodity exposure that we have in South Africa.
I want to touch lots of what you said there, but let's start with that commodity one. That is important. And I mean, we saw during the pandemic when we had, at that point, it was the PGMs going to crazy levels. If commodity prices, most notably PGMs, and gold are flying, Iran is stronger. The inverse is true, and that inverse is particularly in times perhaps of subdued a sort of global economic growth. But the commodities are going to have a big impact just because, quite simply, those mining companies get dollars and need to switch it back into ZAR.
We've always seen that commodities play a crucial role in the South African rand. And you're absolutely right in saying, you know, especially when these precious metals actually perform well, then we see this massive inflow of dollars into the country. It gets converted to ZAR, so there's a ZAR demand. And I think a key portion of that that we tend to forget about is what it means for our terms of trade as a country. In very simplified terms, currently the rand is doing very well, and it is attributed to that rally in gold that we've seen. It is attributed to the fact that oil prices have been subdued, and that really improves our terms of trade as a country. And if our terms of trade as a country is positive, then our currency tends to follow suit.
You also mentioned sort of the global situation and how that obviously drives our currency. That's no surprise. We're a small currency in a large market. But I mean, domestic must also have some impact, although sometimes I do feel that the domestic almost gets, I don't know, overweighed. Or, and thinking back to when we got grey listed some 2 odd years ago, and the rand crashes out and goes to 1950, and here we are sub 18.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if we can just refer to what we saw in April with the whole Donald Trump's saga, with the Liberation Day, the rand went all the way to 1980. And as you rightfully mentioned, today we are 1740. And that really tells a picture, or shows us a picture, of the rand. Yes, we are subject to domestic influences. And yes, politics matter, economics matter on the ground. But what matters more often is how the global market acts and what broader risk sentiment is. We often see quite a bit of investor inflows when the Fed starts cutting interest rates and we have a nice big interest rate differential. And that actually has very little to do with the dynamic on the ground in South Africa. And that really comes down to investors going, looking at the global environment and saying, where can we get the most return for the same amount of risk? So they compare us to our peers, other emerging markets, and they say, you know what, South Africa is attractive in terms of yield. And we see a lot of those capital inflows into bonds, for instance, because of that yield pickup that they can earn.
Yeah, I get your point. It's the peer group that we sit in that often is perhaps more important. You mentioned up top, you're talking around, it's not always good, it's not always bad. The volatility, whilst scary, it certainly can be, it also can offer opportunity.
It definitely offers opportunity, and I think especially in the investment sphere and in the import-export space. But in order to capitalize on volatility, you need to be able to say that I am not purely looking from a defense perspective at volatility, but I am actively seeking opportunities when we start looking at volatilities. I, as an investor, an importer, an exporter, am actively looking for dislocations in the market. I am looking to see when we consider the rand to be undervalued or overvalued, for instance, and also looking at where opportunities present themselves in terms of investment strategies. Going into the market, looking for those undervalued stocks to include into my portfolio and making use of those opportunities, and then having the patience to wait it out and not panic every time the market turns around you a little bit.
That's actually a great point, because it is. It's ignoring, for want of a word, the fear. And I was going to say, it's having that strategy. It's having that discipline. We've talked around before, particularly around importers and exporters, but it's applicable to investors as well, to have a plan, because the rand is going to give opportunity and you need to kind of make that plan, execute on it as and when.
That's absolutely correct. I think a lot of times what South Africans find ourselves in is that we don't have a plan. All we do is we start panicking when we see the rand weakening, when we see the market sell off. And we tend to get out at the bottom. And if you just have the patience and you have a plan and you stick to your plan and you know what your goal is, then the volatility can actually work in your favor quite significantly.
Yeah, and it stops that knee jerk. I think it was 1990 back in April, as you say. Here we are, way 2 and plus better off. We'll leave it there. Bianca Borges, Director, Citadel Global. Appreciate the time. That's the show for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow where passive struggles.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.